This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Listen in to Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9.
This game was played during the Second World Computer Chess Championship. Chess 4.6 ran on a Control Data Corporation computer, the Cyber 176, designed in part by Seymour Cray. At this time, these were the fastest computers in the world.
Two sides, different colors. One of them's got to win, one of them's got to lose.
I greet you for our annual North American Computer Chess Tournament. I present you with the best and the brightest.
We're just watching them get ready for the end of the world here. World War III.
Okay, so the computers play chess versus other computers. Wow.
And we have something new this year. We have a lady who is competing way in the back corner. There she is.
If all computers can do is calculate, then what is artificial intelligence?
Computers are getting smaller, they're getting better, they're getting faster. It's a matter of time before we beat people with these things.
I'd be willing to bet that you and I are the only ones here who even understand that programming has a feminine side. I would love to stay in your room if you have an extra bed. Hole in the back of the water will
fall, hole in the back of the water. It's a couples group. I don't know if you've ever done any encounter stuff or anything like that.
Look deep within me to find what is inside you.
Don't you think it's strange that we're all here at the same time?
Have you been with a lot of women, Peter?
Can you try something else? Can you try do your own move on your own?
Seems to be a little glitch here.
War is death. Hell is pain. Chess is victory.
You want to know the real future of computers?
Tell me.
Dating.
What, you mean computers are going to start dating each other?
Welcome to Sci-Fi and Scream. I have on the phone, I'm talking to Andrew Bajalski. I hope I got that right. I will edit it if I haven't.
Oh, close enough. I say Bajalski, but
Bajalski.
You know, I Poland a few years ago and they told me I was saying it wrong, so, which is to say you got it more correct than I did.
Okay. So, Andrew, we're talking to you because you've created this very fascinating, intriguing film called Computer Chess. That's the name of it. It's set in the 1980s, or is it exactly 1980? I'm not too sure.
You know, we never quite specify in the movie. It's somewhere on the cusp between the 70s and the 80s.
You can't quite tell with this film, and that's what I find really fascinating about it. I've been lucky to have seen a screener of it, so I'm very fortunate. But without spoiling it too much, what can you tell us about this film of yours?
It's very strange. I mean, it's certainly the strangest thing that I've ever made, but it's about a tournament of computer chess programmers circa 1980 or so. You know, these were real things. These were real tournaments. And I think most people, to the extent that people are aware of the phenomenon of computer programs playing chess, the most famous program was Deep Blue, which in 1997 beat the world reigning human champion, Garry Kasparov, and that was a real turning point, you know, a great historical watershed moment for chess and certainly for artificial intelligence. But our movie takes place, you know, about 20 years before that, so these are the guys who are still working up to that and still have a long way to go. And there would be these tournaments where folks would bring all their programs together to play chess against each other to determine, you know, they're a long way from being competitive against the best human players, but we're still duking it out with each other. You know, from there, I think that's kind of our jumping off point to all kinds of madness and all sorts of questions about intelligence, artificial and organic. And it was a lot of fun for me to do. It's not a world that I knew really anything about going into this, but the more I learned, the more fun I had with it.
Yeah, look, that is intriguing. As much as I do enjoy your previous work and, of course, your connection to something called, and you must get this a lot, Mumblecore, as it's been coined. I had to look at the details that were sent to me on the email a few times. I thought, it can't be the same guy. Why would he do something like this? And I thought, I've got to find out what's going on. Because, of course, in our show, we wouldn't ever cover your normal sort of work that you do, of course, and famously you've been called the godfather of Mumblecore, stuff that you have done like Beeswax, worked with Joe Swanberg, Hannah Takes the Stairs, you've acted as well as directed and written Funny Ha Ha going back 2002, Mutual Appreciation the following year, and you've done very well in these so-called smaller independent type of films. So this is quite a departure, yeah?
Yeah, yes and no. I mean, I'm such a contrarian. I think there's a part of me that, you know, when people would say that my first three movies were all cut from the same cloth, I would want to stomp my foot and say, no, can't you see how different they all are? And now that everybody's saying how different this one is, I want to stomp my foot and say, no, can't you see it's the same vision, it's the same artist. But of course it is. In so many formal ways, we did everything differently here. I think my earlier movies are very quiet, chatty little indies about relationships, and the storytelling in those movies really takes place at the level of performance. So there was a kind of necessity of tastefulness. We had to be tasteful in how we shot and edited them. And on Computer Chess, there was really no need to be tasteful. any idea that anybody had, we would try to throw in the mix and just get this thing brimming with as many off-kilter ideas as we could come up with and try to entertain ourselves.
Oh, well, it's really entertaining. The first thing that struck me was I sat there, and I was thinking, so is this a documentary? And it did fool me for a little bit, and I thought, this has got me. Was that your approach that this would be like? Looking at, it was like being a fly on the wall in many ways, harking back to another era.
One of the biggest kind of experiments of this movie was we shot it on old analog video cameras in fact, these cameras came out in the late 60s, early 70s, and it's a kind of visual language that has vanished from the earth. I mean, nobody has used these cameras in 30-plus years, and they're very beautiful. The images they produce are not really like any of the video that came after. They have this kind of almost like a spectral quality. There's a way that, you know, images leave trails, and if you point at a bright light, that the light would be burned in. And there's a kind of beauty to that I liked going back and recapturing, but I knew that also was, to make a period piece, this is great for a period piece because it's a kind of image that, you know, has to speak about a certain time. Instantly, I think the camera alone does so much to transport you there. And then, of course, we had brilliant production designer, brilliant costume designer, and brilliant actors who could really sell this era. But
very otherworldly, because it does, it's like some ancient past, and you think, are they going to get a game of Pong out next, you know?
Sure.
And just the depth and field of those, that particular black and white. Because I didn't find out till later that you'd use this particular type of video camera, the Sony AVC-3260.
And
pretty specific. How hard was it to get a stock film for video film for this?
Well, in the old days, you would have shot straight to a 3/4-inch videotape. We considered that and then figured out that although it was possible to get one of the old cameras that was still in working condition, it was pretty close to impossible to get a 3/4-inch tape deck that would be reliable. Mm-hmm. So we actually ended up shooting in this very 21st century fashion, straight to hard drive. There never was any tape, but that required all kinds of ridiculous converter boxes, and it ended up being a much more complex operation than I ever anticipated. The camera presented so many challenges, and throughout post-production it ended up presenting much more challenges, but I'm so grateful that we used it and we didn't try to fake it, because it also gave us so much personality. There's so much that camera did that we couldn't have anticipated until we went into battle with it, and I think it really does a lot to build the character of the movie.
Now, speaking of the character of the movie, the palette you've got there of the different types of actors, and a lot of these people aren't actors as well, that kind of mix leaves you guessing as who's an actor and who isn't. Not that that matters, of course, but there are some very interesting classic sort of characters you've got in there. Like, I really couldn't stop laughing at the Michael Papa George character.
Sure.
He was a delight character. what is he really about? I mean, I know we don't have much time, but...
What is the character about?
Yeah. What can you tell us?
Well, the character is kind of the... He's the maverick, and often, you know, the joke is on him. But I think, you know, from what little I did learn about the history of computer chess before I started to even conceive the story, I got the sense that there were, you know, three big groups of players in this world. There were the people who were coming out of the kind of think tank university world, the people coming out of the corporate world, you know, and some of them were building chess programs for sale. And then there were just the mad geniuses. There were the indie people, the people working in their garages, which, you know, it was a huge, I mean, a lot of the greatest innovators in computing history came from that group. Often they were also real eccentrics. And so I wanted this character to be eccentric and to be off kilter. And I cast my old friend Miles Page, who I've known for a long time and, you know, had been roommates with at one point, and who acted in my first movie, Funny Haha, and had not acted since, to my knowledge, but... You know, I knew that he was the guy who was going to bring this off-kilter energy that I needed. I'm so glad that people have responded to that character the way they have.
It is an extraordinary, because he seemed to have all the different levels of the dawn of video games, in a way, and the types of different types of people that you have, that you can see now, have become very successful. I mean, one of the characters, the very young chap in it, Patrick, is a Patrick Roaster, who plays a very young...
Reaster.
He's sort of like, he could be a Steve Jobs or a young Bill Gates, you know. He seems quite innocent, but extremely smart. And he just calls himself a programmer, you know, and is so focused on that. There's a lot of that nerd element that's in there.
Yeah, well, and I mean, the fortune of the nerd has changed unbelievably over the course of a generation. The fact that, you know, as we all know, like, it's you know, I recently saw some 11-year-old girls walking around wearing T-shirts that said dork and geek on them, and I just thought, that's not, when I was a kid, no kid that age, you know, particularly that age where you're so susceptible to being teased, would ever dare to self-identify
That's right.
as a nerd, geek, or dork. But now, you know, now it's an enviable thing. And I think, you know, to look back at these guys of that previous generation, in a way, I think that, I think of those nerds almost as like monks, you know, that it took a real commitment to do what they do. And it's a commitment that is easy to make fun of, but also, you know, to me, tremendously admirable in many ways.
That was one of the questions I was going to say to you. I was going to say, yeah, it reminds me of a bunch of monks who are, yeah, writing something down or almost translating something from a higher power, so to speak.
Yep.
Plugged in higher power and translating it, but it's not available to anyone else. And that's the feeling I got from, especially without spoiling it, especially towards the end of the film, of course. Mm-hmm. It becomes even more mysterious. Did you have any idea that it was going to go down that quite surreal sort of track?
Well, you know, at some point I had to have the idea. I mean, I think from the beginning, from the first spark of thinking that I wanted to make a movie in this world and on this topic, I think I knew it had to be strange, you know, because what they're doing is so strange. You know, artificial intelligence is such a beguiling, fascinating, bizarre endeavor.
Yeah, true.
So it was all, as much as, of course, you know, writing computer code can be the driest, most boring thing in the world, and it's not something I claim to be an expert on at all. This story had to be inextricably, in my mind, linked with going down that rabbit hole.
Yeah, no, really interesting. I'm not going to give it away, obviously, in this interview, but...
Yeah, well, there are a few rabbit holes, and we go pretty off the wall.
Yeah, I found myself rewinding a few scenes and looking back at them, and I thought this would be even more fun if it was on VHS.
Yeah, sorry, we haven't come through on that. you're not the first to request it. We'll see what we can do.
All right, so now that it's been released, it's starting to do the rounds, and will finally be shown exclusively in Australia, just at the ACME, actually ACME in Melbourne. It starts December the 27th, so it's part of one of their long plays. You're going to be coming out at all to Australia at any stage?
I would love to. I don't think I'm able to this round, but I was there, I think, about 7 years ago, and I would love to get back, but sorry to miss out this time. We had Patrick Reister, actually, who plays Peter in the movie, was down there for some of the festivals when we played festivals.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. But I was bummed to miss out myself.
Yeah, I understand. All right. Now, what happens to the film after this? It's starting to gather quite a bit of momentum. How do you feel about that with this?
Well, we'll see. I mean, it came out in the States. It's winding down its run in the States now. And, you know, it's played a couple other countries, and I think there's still one or two more to go. But basically, my end of it is why. I mean, it's a funny thing about being a filmmaker is you work and work and work, and you live with something for so long, and it's, you know, it consumes your brain. And the very moment when you release it to the world is the moment when other people enter that world and want to talk to you about it. And that's also the same moment that you're trying to move on. So we'll see. I mean, you know, I hope the movie has a long and happy life, and I hope people remember it. It's always the fondest hope I think any filmmaker has for their work is, you know, hopefully somebody will remember this in 10 years, 20 years. But that's out of my hands, and I've got to try to make something else now.
No, true. It's a bit like a very sweet, bittersweet sort of love letter to nerd technology and nostalgia. I felt myself quite sentimental watching it, especially the end credits with that song. It's very beautiful. And when the rain comes down and, you know, there's a bit of short-circuiting going on or something.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was my, it's my computer movie, but it's also certainly my hippie movie.
Yeah, there's a real interesting, is it NLP conference or convention that's happening at the same time?
And that's something that's interesting to me, just, you know, historically. I mean, I think there is so much weird kind of crossover, unlikely as it seems, between the computer world and the kind of new age spiritualism world.
Yeah, it's pretty strange.
Yeah.
But one of the cutest scenes I've seen was when they're chanting, and at the same time it's the competitions going on, and they have to share the same room, and things reach ahead, pretty much.
Indeed.
They do. It's checkmate, as you could say. All right, look, Andrew, I'm going to have to let you go very shortly. So, yeah, thank you very much for talking to us on Sci-Fi and Scream. Andrew Bojalski, I'll say it how you want it to be said. That's not a problem. And thank you very much for Computer Chess.
This is Andrew Bojalski, director of Computer Chess. You are listening to Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9.
Perfect. we got it in there. Thank you.
Okay.
That's great. Thanks very much, and good luck with the film. I really loved it. Brilliant.
Thank you so much.
Cheers.
Appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hello to all my friends at Joy 94.9. It's me, Mario. Woohoo! You guys, number one. Wahoo!
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.